Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here. What's up, Ryan?
Not much. Enjoying this sunny Seattle weather today. It's supposed to be in the 90s, which is a scorcher for us PNW people.
That's about what it is in Reno today. So we're matching you.
Well, oh, really? Wow. Okay. That's right.
Yeah. Spending the summer in Nevada, which has been beautiful, doing little weekend trips. But all the while, staying really busy.
Totally. And you know what? We had a blast last week at our bus tour in Houston. That was super fun.
Exactly. It was so fun. It was whirlwind. I think I was on the ground for less than 24 hours. But yeah, we got to see 4 out of the 7 storage facilities. Thank you to all the listeners that came out. That was a blast. If you missed it, hope to see you on the next one. I'm sure there will be one at some point. And we had a great happy hour at Tall Yards Brewing. People got to drink some beers on us.
Yeah, we had a CRJ 200 full of pilots traversing Houston on a 55, right. Well, actually 55 passengers on that bus. But man, that was a blast. We actually saw over 100 people over 2 days because we did a bus tour for 2 days.
That's right.
And I think the feedback on that was world class. Like everybody really enjoyed the time and it was a lot of fun. We learned a lot. We walked the sites. I actually like thought of things and learned things as I went through each site. But one thing we did say on the bus, you know, and thank you for some of the awesome reviews that have come into our podcast.
Hey.
Mr. McAllister, thank you so much for leaving us a 5-star review and saying how much you enjoy the podcast and what it does and what it's done for you. So if you're listening to this, shoot us a review. Only if it's a good one, though. We don't want bad ones.
That's right.
If you want to complain to us, you can just send us an email or something like that.
There we go.
Yeah, it'll go right to our spam box. Anyway, we'd love some reviews. Of course, it inspires us to keep going and inspires other people to listen to the show. But one of the things that McAllister actually mentions in his review is talking about tax and legal planning and estate and asset protection. Really, the asset protection one is the underlying one. And that's the thing that we're talking about today is asset protection. And I would say, Tate, you know, the number one question that we both get is, do I need to put my rental property in an LLC? And then yeah. There's like all kinds of questions about, is one LLC enough? Or do I have to put every property in an LLC? Do I have to just do one? Do I have to do a master LLC and then subsequent LLCs? And can I just risk it without it? Can I,
right.
You know, how complex do I have to make it? Does it have to be in Wyoming, Nevada, or Delaware? Which one is better? Or right. Is it in my home state? Or, you know, just all these questions. And it's just, there's so many different ways and confusion out there on how people actually put their rental properties in their LLCs. Other question I get all the time too is like, how do I title my syndication? Do I put my right. syndication in an LLC and is that necessary or do I put it in my trust? So
absolutely.
We're going to demystify this today. Who's our guest?
Our guest today is Adam Kinty and he is from Nevada Corporate Headquarters. Adam is an absolute wealth of knowledge. I actually got connected to him through a referral. I actually can't remember how I got connected with Adam. If you're listening to this and you're like, hey, Bozo, I connected you with Adam. Thank you. And maybe shoot me an email and tell me that, hey, I was the one. But Adam has been amazing. To be fully transparent, I've actually used Nevada Corporate Headquarters, and this isn't a plug for them or anything. I literally have used them over the last few weeks to restructure our physical rental property asset protection structure, our entity structure. And man, they've got some really smart ways of doing things. And I had to retool how I thought of a lot of this stuff. And I think people are really going to enjoy it because what we're really trying to get to the bottom of is what should I do and how should I do it?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll give you two philosophies. I think a lot of people feel like they have to go run out and stand up all these LLCs before they right. step outside and, you know, take an ounce of right. risk. Right. Look, you've got to be an investor first and you've yeah. got to actually be making moves and buying assets. I think exactly. sometimes people go yes, and like,
so true.
I mean, literally one of my accountants from the past is like, you will not believe how many people go and set out, you know, 18 LLCs and they own no property. So don't do that. Don't sign up for the LLC factory and stand up all these things that you don't really need.
Exactly.
But do know that you will get the asset protection through an LLC. And again, we're not giving any tax, legal, or investment advice, obviously. Do your own diligence. Absolutely. Talk to your own attorneys. Talk to this guy. But, you know, I think it's really important. Like, things will go wrong. As you buy more and more units, as you acquire more and more wealth, guess what? People are going to come after you because they want your money. And LLCs are a great way to protect yourself from these creditors and these predators and these people that are using park bench attorneys and, you know, the Better Call Sauls of the world to come after you. And ask me how I know. I mean, I've, you know, now over 40,000 units, you know, people are after you, right? So you have to protect yourself, and an LLC is a great way to do that. And so just consider that in your investment journey. Of course, always talk to an attorney. We're not one. That's why we bring on folks like today to talk about it and have good conversations and introduce you to potential vendors that you can go to and talk to, right? And that's what the whole point of the podcast is. So
without further ado, let's jump in.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Adam Kinte, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. You know, we've had a chance to work together for the last few weeks ahead of you being on the podcast. So I actually have some insider knowledge, but excited to have you on the show to talk about entity structuring, asset protection, and ways that you can more efficiently structure your physical rental portfolio. So with that, why don't I turn it over to you? Give us a little bit about your background from your own words. How'd you get into this? Who are you?
Yeah. So Adam Kinte, obviously. Our firm is Nevada Corporate Headquarters. We went woke and we're now just NCH. But the backbone of our, that's our 36th year in business. We have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, like 19,000 five-star reviews. The backbone of our company is we form corporations and LLCs. In-house, we have a full legal department. I have one of the best CPA firms. So we do tax and accounting for business owners and investors all over the country. We have a business credit team if you want to separate business credit from personal credit. I have a team that does custom business plans. We do the estate planning like trust and wills. And then we also do the self-directed IRAs and self-directed solo Ks. So all the support services for business owners and investors is what I specialize in. Personally, I've been doing this for 24 years now. So I had a friend in 2001. I moved to Vegas, had a job offer there, moved to Vegas. And you know, when you fly in from Las Vegas or when you fly into Las Vegas, oh, the lights, the glitz, awesome. When you drive in, I drove in from Phoenix, Arizona. What a cruddy town. I thought, oh no, I'm going to be here. I got 6 months of free corporate housing, my sign-on bonus. I will work here for 6 months and maybe move somewhere nice like San Diego. Well, that was in 99. I got married, had six kids. That changed things a little bit. So, but yeah, the friend that referred me said, Adam, you got to do corporations. I said, Nate, I'm not a CPA. I'm not an attorney. How am I going to do that? He said, I've got a friend that owns this company. Why don't you go talk to him? So I went and talked to this guy, Greg, and he said, Adam, you seem really smart. Here is a stack of books. Be here on Monday. I started reading all these books about corporations and estate planning and taxes, and it was boring at best. It's like reading the owner's manual of your car. And every, you know, things change all the time, and no book can keep up with all the changes. So I worked for this little firm for several years. And one day I got a call from Court Christie, who is the founder of NCH. And he had hired me as the director. And Court was really smart when he formed NCH. He knows that there are four professionals that you have to have. You've got to have a good CPA. You've got to have a good attorney. You have to have a good estate planner, and you have to have a good financial planner. The problem is that you go to your CPA with five questions. He'll give you five answers based on what he knows as a CPA. Well, take those same five questions, drive over to your attorney's office. Same five questions, you'll get five completely different answers based on what he knows as a attorney. So all these people are combining, they're providing conflicting information all the time. And so Court hired the best CPAs, the best attorneys, the best estate planners, the best financial planners, put them under one roof and said, all right, guys, work together and get these things set up properly from a tax, asset protection, estate planning, and financial planning standpoint. So I got hired back in 2008. So I've been at NCH now for 16, coming up on 17 years. And I've just been very fortunate to be able to work with, you know, top professionals in every aspect of setting up and operating businesses. And it's just a blessing to be able to work with people at such a high level, from small businesses just getting started, taking companies public, which we'll never do again. But yeah, a lot of things that we've done over the years. So we just have a great team behind us to make sure these things are set up and operating properly.
Amazing. Well, I know that, you know, you work with some larger businesses, but the average airline pilot that listens to this show probably has, you know, a rental property or two, or they're looking to buy one and looking to create some efficiencies within their entity structure, or certainly some asset protection. So we were talking before the show about how to unpack all this stuff, because, you know, you're a wealth of knowledge, and we could go on for 3 hours, but we kind of wanted to start at phase one here and talk about the LLC and the different states that make sense to incorporate. You've probably heard about Delaware, Wyoming, Nevada. So can you unpack that for us? Why is Nevada such a great state? Why is Wyoming such a great state? What makes these states different? And maybe we can just boil this down to, what is asset protection for somebody who just is tuning in?
Yeah. So we'll start with all the big companies: Microsoft, Walmart, Disney. They're all set up in Delaware. Delaware has the best laws for big business. The laws are so good. Those companies pay the state of Delaware millions and millions of dollars a year in setup and renewal cost, which they gladly pay because all the laws protect the shareholders, and that's how Wall Street wants it. But because Delaware makes so much money off big business, they have nothing special for small business. And that's where Nevada came in. Thanks to the mob, back in the 1950s and 60s, when the mob came to Nevada, they started heavily influencing our politicians to create all these great laws to protect their business operations. And even though the mob officially moved to Wall Street back in the 90s, Nevada kept its laws strong for small business, big revenue generator for Nevada. Well, over the years, Nevada's kept raising its fees. Wyoming came in, they modeled their laws after Nevada, and those have really become the two best states for small business. And there's a lot of unique protections, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to, you know, you own property. We live in a world that it has gotten so far away from suing someone that's done something wrong to just trying to tie in the deep pockets. And, right. You know, we got 1.3 million attorneys in the U.S., and there's just not enough good cases to go around. So these right. guys get stuck taking bad cases with bad facts, just trying to make a living. And crazy how recently, you know, we always see these contingency fee attorneys. So I actually live in Omaha, Nebraska right now, but I had been in Vegas. My office is in Vegas. And I was at the office over the holidays for Christmas. And I had a little balcony, and we're on the third floor of this building. I had a little balcony in my office there, and I walked outside, and I see this bus driving by, a city bus, and on the side of it, Morgan & Morgan, with over 1,000 attorneys in every state, if we don't win, you don't pay a dime. So I remind people, poorest people in this country can hire the best attorneys. It costs them nothing. And right. these attorneys, they are contingency fee attorneys. They're going to take that case for free. So. Right. We've got to think ahead a little bit. And I tell everyone, keep good insurance. I used to be a licensed insurance agent. I was licensed in 43 states, and it's a dirty business. I tell everyone, keep good insurance. But remember, there's so many things that happen where insurance won't pay or won't pay enough. That's where the LLC comes into play. That right. is truly, if it's set up and operating properly, that LLC is going to protect all of your personal assets, your future wages, everything you have. If it's not set up right, but you'll find out about that when you get sued.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, a lot of people probably have never been sued. What does that look like? What's the most common way that somebody ends up getting sued? Let's start there.
I'll say common way. Well, there's two things we look at. When you own property, as innocent as you may be, if you own the property, you are responsible. One I'm dealing with right now, I have a client that had he personally owned 9 properties. He's involved in a bunch of syndications, both general partner, limited partner. And then he was trying to help a friend out. So he did a general partnership, and him and his buddy bought a house in Virginia. And lady moves in July. And now he's in almost $100,000 in legal fees because the lady is claiming there is mold in the property. And guess what the insurance company says about mold? Sorry, we don't cover that. Got another guy last week. He's dealing with an eviction problem. He had to evict a tenant in a commercial building, and now they came back and filed a countersuit for $1.3 million. The guy got evicted. He wasn't paying his rent, and he's filing a lawsuit on that. So I guess common, I don't think there's anything common. It's like lightning striking. We know that lightning strikes all the time. We just don't know when and where it's going to happen.
Right.
Now, that's the inside liability. When you own that property, I had another one recently where a guy bought a new build in Florida as a rental, and he gets a notice from Morgan & Morgan that they're suing him because somebody has slipped and fell coming down the staircase, and they claim that there is a faulty stair rail or handrail. So he's getting sued for that. So owning the property, you have liability, but oftentimes people don't think about you personally have liability as well. So if you were to get in a car wreck or anything like that, you know, depending on the state you live in, your primary residence may have a certain level of homestead protection where they can sue you and they can win, but they can't take your house. So Florida and Texas, for example, unlimited homestead exemption, whatever your house is worth, they can't take it. In Nevada, I think it's $550,000 of equity is protected in Nevada. And there's a lot of states that have minimal $50,000 to $150,000 of homestead protection. But generally, your primary residence does have some level of protection as a primary residence. However, your rental properties, no, they're not protected. So I'm married. We have our six boys and five of them drive and they drive my vehicles. Well, if they get in a wreck, guess who's getting sued? That'll be me. So you get brought into a deposition. You got to list everything you own and those rental properties are part of it. And this is why getting the LLC set up is if it's done right, and we'll talk about the Nevada, Wyoming, some of the benefits, but they can sue you, they can win, they cannot touch that LLC to satisfy your personal debts and obligations. And again, those are very unique protections that are not offered in all states. Nevada and Wyoming, you know, those are the ones where we get that charging order protection by statute for single member and multi-member LLCs. So that, again, we got two sides of it, the building causing an accident, and then you and your liability and your family's liability.
And just so that everybody's following, somebody slipping and falling in your property is an inside attack, and you getting in a car wreck outside and they're taking your property because they're suing you personally, that's an outside attack, just so that we can tie back to those phrases. So that brings us to Nevada and Wyoming and charging order protection. So let's dive into that. What's a charging order protection? Why does it matter?
So the charging order protection is unique. Yeah, but before we talk about that, let's talk about the corporate veil, because that's probably the first part. The first line is the corporate veil. So the corporate veil is that legal separation. It's the invisible wall separating you from the business. And care must be taken to preserve the corporate veil. If the corporate veil is pierced, your company will have no protection value whatsoever. And it's important to know that statistically, nationwide, the corporate veil gets pierced almost 50% of the time. This is exclusively for small business when you have five shareholders or less. It makes it really easy for, of course, to make the alter ego. They say, well, you own the company, you control the company, you are the company. This is nothing more than a sham. And pretty much every state in the country, there's anywhere from 6 to 10 ways of piercing the corporate veil. Ultimately, it boils down to your risk. It's up to a judge to decide whether or not you should be held liable. And a quick side note, if you live in California, you have a California LLC or corporation, 28 ways of piercing the veil in California, the worst laws in the country that do not protect business owners. So we'll note on that. So the corporate veil is that legal separation. And it is true, depending on the state that you incorporate, depends on the strength of that veil. So under other states, we have the alter ego, failure to maintain appropriate corporate records, commingling of funds. There's all these different ways of piercing that veil. Under Nevada and Wyoming, it is the highest standard of protection. To pierce that veil is a three-prong test. All three prongs must be met. And the third prong being to prove fraud or manifest injustice, which requires the courts go inside your mind to determine your ill intent. Thank you, mob. We have just a handful of veil piercings. A few cases were Ponzi schemes, like the Bernie Madoff deal. A few cases, guys were selling mining rights for land that was owned by the Bureau of Land Management. And it's like you or me trying to sell the Statue of Liberty. There was a recent case in Wyoming called the Green Hunter Energy case, where a corporation had set up a wholly owned subsidiary LLC and then ran it as a complete sham to defraud creditors. So bottom line, yeah, you're not committing fraud. You'll never commit fraud. Yeah, they would never be able to pierce that veil to sue you personally.
And I have a quick side note on this too. For anybody that doesn't really have their head wrapped around what a corporation is, Can you put on your history professor hat for a second? Maybe talk about the world's first corporations, the Dutch East India Trading Company, that and the whole reason this idea of a corporation formed in the first place.
Yeah. So the whole point of these corporations was that we had these companies that were sending people out over on ships across the ocean to go do trade, et cetera. And oftentimes they didn't come back. And the people that were putting together these escapades, they wanted to make sure that their name was not attached, so that when your son or daughter didn't return, that's not on them. So they developed this corporate entity as a way of making sure that they personally weren't the ones that were, you know, hiring you to go out and die and going on some ocean going venture. And then over the years, these things have grown. So corporations have been around for a very long time. And the English law was really in England, that's where a lot of our laws here in the US have come from. But these corporate entities have been around for a very long time.
Right. And this is where I laugh, because I remember when Mitt Romney was running for president and he said, well, now corporations are people too. And that, you know, everybody got super mad at him, but that it's true. I mean, a corporation is a separate entity. It has an EIN number, which is like its social security number. It is a separate and different entity than you. It can conduct business. It can take on liability. It can do all of these things as if it were a separate person. And so I think that's key to understanding the piercing of the corporate veil, where they're saying, hey, unless you follow these specific formalities, we're going to disregard this corporation, because you're not really running a corporation. You just did the legal setup and then you didn't do anything to actually, like, things like if you didn't create a separate bank account for it, if you didn't actually transfer a property into the name of it, if you didn't have meeting minutes or annual, you know, I mean, there's all these things that you have to do to make sure that you run a business like a business. And if you don't do that, then piercing the corporate veil means that the courts say, hey, this isn't really a real business. It's just a little bit of paperwork. So, but you're saying that in Nevada, it's very difficult to pierce the corporate veil. And in Wyoming,
almost impossible,
which is fantastic.
Again, unless you're committing fraud, which you would never do. So we still, you know, I form an entity. We set up the company. You have your initial organizational minutes. So you have your articles of organization. We file a document with the Secretary of State saying we want to be an LLC or we want to be a corporation. And that's your articles of organization. And then we have your initial organizational minutes, which appoint you as the person in charge of signing documents, et cetera. And then we have the operating agreement, which are the rules that you have to follow. And the operating agreement, oftentimes, I just had a lady a few months ago that she used some paperwork mill and got her company set up in Florida. She's involved in a big lawsuit right now. And she's finding out how very important that operating agreement is, because it was a terrible operating agreement. I think she downloaded it, or whoever formed the company downloaded it from the Secretary of State. They're not in the business of practicing law. And so she has this terrible operating agreement. And now she is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in this lawsuit based on the fact her operating agreement wasn't good. So we actually have a really good operating agreement, regardless of what type of business that you're operating. And we put in that operating agreement for legal purpose or for compliance purpose, your only legal requirement for legal compliance is you must have one board meeting every year. That's it. And it's silly. There is no legal requirement that any details of this meeting be documented. We only have to document that the meeting was held and you and your spouse or you and your partners were present. So when renewals come up, I have a renewals department. They send out the renewal notice with your annual meeting minutes. And you get out your annual meeting minutes. You can literally write on that paper, the LLC will operate the same this year as it did last year. Sign it, date it, put it in the record book. That is it. So in terms of the, you had mentioned about doing meeting minutes and such, if the operating agreement is set up properly, you're not going to have to worry about those things.
I know there's someone out there listening that has an LLC, they have a property in, they've had it for years, and they're like, I've never done that. What would you say to them?
You need to reach out to us. You got to change your ways. Because the fact is, when you need it the most, you know, you set that LLC up for that protection, and you're going to find out that it's not right as soon as an accident happens and the lawyer hands you a notice that he's suing you with a subpoena for your corporate record book, which you either don't have or don't have up to date. And now you got problems.
Okay. So now that we have our arms around, you know, what a corporation is, piercing the corporate veil, the basic things that you have to do to maintain one, let's talk about charging order protection and why Nevada and Wyoming.
Yeah. So the charging order protection is really important. So every state in this country has some level of what's called charging order protection. And what that is, the design of this was if you have partners in the business, to prevent an innocent partner from losing his interest in a business, they came up with this charging order. The charging order equals judgment. You know, someone wins a charging order, they're winning it, they get a judgment against you. So it was designed to prevent innocent partners from losing interest in business. And that was the premise of the charging order protection. And it was the whole point of that, it goes two ways. It's outside and inside. So when you have charging order protection, you know, for example, California, if you have a multi-member LLC, you do get charging order protection, but it's very weak. Generally speaking, and I'll tell you the Nevada and Wyoming side of it, is let's say that you have a California LLC and you have a rental property in California, accident happens, the insurance company says, sorry, we don't cover that, which happens often. If the plaintiff can demonstrate that you're not able to satisfy the judgment within a reasonable time frame, which is within 90 to 120 days, judicial foreclosure begins and the courts will foreclose on cash or assets held by the LLC to satisfy the judgment. Well, with the charging order protection, they can file the lawsuit and they can win. They cannot foreclose on cash or assets. What makes Nevada and Wyoming unique is the charging order or the judgment they would receive is the sole and exclusive remedy of the judgment creditor, eliminating the possibility of judicial foreclosure. You become the worst nightmare of these attorneys. They can sue and they can win, but they can't get paid. They can't pierce the veil. You're not committing fraud. They can't foreclose on cash or assets. They're stuck with their charging order or their judgment, hoping you someday distribute a profit. They are only entitled to profit distributions. So that is the benefit. And there's 5 states in the country that provide charging order protection for single member LLCs, Nevada and Wyoming being the best of those 5. But it also goes the other direction, where what goes hand in hand with the charging order protection is no reverse piercing. And that's if you got sued personally, they can sue you, they can win, but they can't touch the LLC to satisfy your personal debts and obligations. So that kind of goes hand in hand when we're talking about charging order protection.
That's excellent. And you know, I mean, this is important because, you know, as we were talking offline, you know, a lot of people have set up this old structure of using an LLC in the state that the property resides. And that LLC is then owned by, let's say, a Wyoming holding company. Let's talk about, you know, if somebody owns a property in California, for instance, and they use a California LLC and then a Wyoming holding company. That's the one structure that you see a lot, right? Is a bunch of different companies, LLCs, owning all of these investment properties owned by a holding company up top. And people do that for anonymity because the Wyoming holding company doesn't tell anyone who owns the Wyoming holding company. So there's that barrier of anonymity there. But we were talking before about that gentleman that you had that had 21 rental properties with 21 LLCs, and it creates this nightmare. So what are some problems with that? Maybe you want to talk through that structure for anybody that doesn't purely understand it, and then unpack why there might be a better way to do things.
Yeah. So the theory is that you have your California entity because your property is in California, and then you set up a Wyoming LLC to own your California LLC. So we get that piercing protection. So if somebody sues your company, if they pierce the veil, they're not suing you, they're suing the Wyoming company, and you're protected. Conversely, if you got sued personally, you get brought into a deposition, you got to list everything you own, your house, your cars, and you don't own the California LLC, which they could have taken, you own the Wyoming company, which they can't take, you know, no reverse piercing. So the problem with that is that you are missing out on the charging order protection, because if they can demonstrate that you're not able to satisfy the judgment within a reasonable time frame, they can foreclose on cash or assets held by that California LLC. So there's all these different opinions and such. Again, we've been doing this a very long time, and the way we like to set it up is I would much rather have a Nevada or Wyoming LLC registered to do business in California so that I have the Wyoming entity on the front line. Right. So now we get the very best protection without having to have this complex structure. And a reminder for those of you in California, don't forget, every LLC that you own, I don't care where the property is, $800 a year on that darn franchise tax.
Franchise tax.
It is what it is. So yep. We always try and do things in a way that is manageable, scalable, and financially efficient. And getting all these different LLCs set up, it sounds nice, but it turns into a nightmare. That doctor I was telling you about, he's got 21 rental properties. He owns a medical facility. The guy is really busy. And he has got this nightmare of properties, 21 LLCs for all these different properties that he has, all held by a Wyoming LLC. And there's this theory that in Wyoming, your name does not appear on public record as a manager member or managing member of the company. So there's all these talks about the anonymity and privacy. Well, the fact is, there is no such thing as privacy in our world. That's a fact. If I want to find out who owns something, you would not believe how easy it is. We were just hosting a workshop in California a few weeks ago, and one of our attorneys, one of our newer attorneys, he just got out of law school, and he got on stage and he typed in, he goes, hey, let's check out Governor Gavin Newsom. And within a matter of minutes, he said, anybody want his first 5 digits of his social security number? And right there on public record, LexisNexis, boom, boom, boom. It's like $120 a month for their subscription to LexisNexis. They can find anything. Right. He went to the county, pulled up, you can go to the county and pull up county voter records. And boom, there's all your information. The county shows any properties that you own. This stuff is everywhere. So that whole idea of privacy is kind of out the window these days. This is why we set things up in Nevada and Wyoming, is for the indemnification. So another unique element with Nevada and Wyoming is the law reads that you, like Wyoming law says, you shall be indemnified. Acting as manager, member, managing member, agent, employee of the LLC, they can't hold you personally liable for anything unless you're committing fraud. So we go back to the, you know, getting things set up and operating. And could you do it with 21 LLCs? You sure could. But here's another problem. I had a guy in New Jersey, almost same situation, had 21 New Jersey LLCs. And this guy is in his late 60s. And we'll talk later on about using trust instead of separate LLCs. But yeah. So this guy had 21 LLCs. And every time he bought a new property, he would just go to the New Jersey Secretary of State, pay his $125 and file the thing and open a bank account up. And that was that. Use that LLC to collect the rent and pay the expenses. And whatever was left, he wrote himself a check and off he went. There was it was not even a tenant. It was a squatter in one of his properties, a squatter that was drunk and high, slipped and fell and broke her leg and filed a lawsuit against him. A squatter, not even supposed to be there. He got brought into a deposition. And again, the deposition, you got to list everything you own. And he owns that LLC, but he also owns 20 other LLCs. And because they were set up in New Jersey, there is no such thing as reverse piercing protection. Oh, no. This guy was 3 years into the lawsuit, and he was fighting for his life. It was everything. And all of his eggs are in that real estate basket with all these different properties. Imagine how much money that guy is paying in legal fees to defend against a squatter that shouldn't have even been there. That's the world right. We live in. So doing it in a way, again, and when you go that route and you have all these different LLCs, the renewals, the bank accounts, all these things that just become a nightmare to manage. And yeah, it's wonderful to build out your rental portfolio, but you got to run all these things and you got to account for everything properly. So there's better ways to do it, which we will talk about.
Well, and that's something I had to get my head wrapped around when we started our conversations, you know, a few weeks ago was, you know, I've been classically trained, you know, LLC in the state that the property resides and that's owned by the Wyoming Holding Company. And I was getting my head wrapped around the idea of a single LLC to serve as the beneficiary of a trust for all of these different companies. So before we talk about using a single LLC to hold, for lack of a better word, a bunch of different rental properties, let's talk about using a trust versus an LLC to actually take title to rental property, because this is something I have personally learned the hard way, is transferring into and out of an LLC for a residential property is a total pain. You know, everybody says, every book you read says, you know, put your property in LLC. Well, what they don't tell you is that you're going to go out there, get a residential mortgage. You're going to close in your name, because unless it's a commercial property, a big apartment complex, the bank is going to expect you to take the loan in your name. It's a recourse loan. They want you to take title. Well, then you transfer it to an LLC, and that can trigger the due on sale clause. Even if it doesn't trigger the due on sale clause, you're going to pay transfer tax in most counties, which can be hefty. You know, I've paid thousands of dollars of transfer tax to get it into an LLC. And then, lo and behold, 3 years later, interest rates drop. And I go, I want to refinance this thing. Well, guess what? I can't refinance if it's in an LLC. So I have to transfer it back out, pay another few thousand dollars for the transfer out. Now I'm sitting there going, God, do I even really want this thing in the LLC? Can I just get an umbrella policy? You know, and then you bite the bullet, you pay the few thousand dollars to put it back in there. And it's just like, there has to be a better way. So let's talk about the better way. Let's talk about trusts.
Good. So the trusts are fantastic. So there's all types of different trusts, revocable, irrevocable. There's all kinds of trusts, thousands of different types of trusts. But the one that we're talking about today is called a real estate privacy trust. We call them REPTs, real estate privacy trust, which is a form of a revocable grantor trust. You're controlling these things, but it allows us to, we would quit claim the property into this real estate privacy trust. And the beauty of that, well, lots of beauties about it. Number one, no transfer tax. We're moving it into a trust, so we avoid transfer taxes. Number two is there's a federal law called the Garn-St. Germain Act of 1982 that when we put property into a trust, by law, the bank cannot invoke the due on sale clause, period. You never have to worry about it. Now, mental note, that law only applies for residential real estate. Fourplex, triplex, duplex, single family home, townhome, condo, we get the Garn-St. Germain Act. If it is 5 units and above or a commercial building, that law does not apply for those. So no transfer tax, Garn-St. Germain Act, don't have to worry about the bank invoking the due on sale clause. Mortgage stays in your name, still got to make your payments, but now legally the property is held by the trust. So the common term people hear is the word land trust, and my lawyer hates when I use the words land trust. He says, Adam, this is not a land trust. Land trusts are not good. There's, for certain things, they may have be used certain ways, but these are a real estate privacy trust. It's like a land trust on steroids. It allows us to do a couple things. One, we have lifetime beneficiaries. And two, we have death time beneficiaries. So during the course of your lifetime, the beneficiary of that trust is the Wyoming LLC. So picture at the top of the umbrella, we have this LLC that is your holding company. And then across the bottom of the umbrella, every time you buy a new rental, we just have a new real estate privacy trust. That allows us to separate the liability of each property without having to have a bunch of LLCs. And the most beautiful thing about the real estate privacy trust, they have no bank account, no tax return, very simple to set up, minimal cost. But a land trust is really comprised of three parts. We have on public record for each of your properties, we just have the name of the trust and the trustee. Now the trustee for this type of trust, they have no control of your property, no ownership of your property, no liability for your property. They are just a trustee. If a lawsuit comes up, they receive notice you're being sued. Their job is to give you that notice. They also get your annual property tax record, so somebody you trust to give you your mail. So for example, the way I used to do it, I had my sister as my trustee. I recommend if you have a friend or family member, someone with a different last name that doesn't live in your house, serving as the trustee. So I used to be my sister, and recently I got a property. I said, all right, being a little bit of a cheap ass here, I should, a better way to do it is my attorney to be the trustee. So I use my attorney as a trustee, but that's what's on public record, name of the trust and the trustee. What is not on public record is the lifetime beneficiary. That's nowhere on public record. So we appoint the LLC, and the trust says that that LLC gets all the benefits and all the liability. So if, God forbid, a lawsuit comes up and you get dragged into court, very first question, do you own this property? Well, no, Your Honor, I don't. Who does? The 123 Main Street Trust. Their very next question, are you the beneficiary of the 123 Main Street Trust? Well, no, Your Honor, I'm not. Who is? The Wyoming LLC. And they get nothing. Can't pierce the veil. Can't foreclose on cash or assets. You're in a tremendous position of power. Now, that third part of that trust is the death time beneficiary. So upon your death, the beneficiary becomes your revocable living trust. Or if you don't have a revocable trust, you know, I could have the death time beneficiary become your children or whoever you want as a right. beneficiary upon your death. But this is a beautiful way to do it, because now I've got one LLC with one checking account. It's going to collect the rent, pay the expenses, whatever's left. I bank transfer myself the money. Tax time rolls around. And for most people, you know, if you've got a small portfolio, it's just you or you and your spouse, you have a small portfolio, that LLC is disregarded for tax purpose. It does not even file a separate tax return. All the profits and losses of those rentals, they report on your personal return. It is 1040 Schedule E, exactly the same as if you did not have the LLC. And the beauty of this, you could have 10 rentals under this one LLC. And if anyone ever looks up the LLC on public record, the LLC owns nothing. There is no evidence that shows that that LLC does, in fact, have 10 properties under it. So that LLC, if anyone ever looks it up, it's an empty shell. Money in, money out. So again, great way to do it.
Now, it owns nothing because it's simply the beneficiary of all of these trusts.
That's it.
Right. So we're essentially solving two problems here. We're replacing the property ownership at the property level from an LLC to a trust, which, you know, some firms call land trusts. Nevada corporate headquarters calls real estate privacy trusts. Whatever you call it, and however, you know, each firm might structure these things, essentially, it is a grantor trust that holds the property rather than an LLC. And then you have the LLC off to the side owning beneficial interest in that trust. Now, you know, you can set up that same structure and you can still have 21 LLCs with 21 real estate privacy trusts and an LLC for each one of the properties. But you can also, and I'd like to talk about what would you say to the person that says, okay, well, wait a minute, this person has 21 real estate privacy trusts, this same LLC is serving as beneficiary for all 21. Aren't I grouping all of those together now and exposing them all to the same lawsuit?
Great question. So the way that it actually works in the event of a lawsuit is that one property, we're going to isolate that problem. You get a notice that that property is being sued. We are going to go and change the beneficial interest on those 20 other real estate privacy trusts. This is nowhere on public record, but we're just going to change the beneficial interest to a separate LLC that is not part of the problem. Remember that the person that slipped and fell on the property, they were entitled to go after that property. They're not entitled to go after anything else. It's not a party to the lawsuit. These other properties are not a party to the lawsuit. It cannot be seen as fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer. We're not selling the property. We're simply changing the beneficiary of the trust. So it works absolutely beautifully. And we've been through this with many, many clients. It really simplifies things. And by moving the beneficial interest on those 20 other trusts, I'm just isolating that one problem.
Right.
It's there. That LLC is there. We'll deal with it and hopefully be able to settle that case for pennies on the dollar versus if I was holding title in your name or if I had a home state entity that was holding title. Good luck.
Let's talk about fraudulent conveyance. So what is fraudulent conveyance and how can you commit that? What is that for anybody that doesn't know?
Yeah, fraudulent conveyance is when you change things after the fact. So you get notice that you're being sued and then all of a sudden you, oh, shoot, I need to set up an LLC. So we go ahead and transfer that property into an LLC after you got notice that you were being sued. That is fraudulent conveyance. Now, they call it fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer. You're not going to jail for it. But the courts could come back and say, hey, we're not going to recognize that transfer. It was done after the fact. It's fraudulent conveyance. Again, no prison time or anything like that. They just disregard whatever move that you thought you were making. It's not going to work.
And of course, so let's unpack how this structure is different, where you can change things after the fact, after getting a notice of a lawsuit, and it's not fraudulent conveyance. So, and it's due to the structure of the trust.
Correct. I'm not a lawyer, but we have a bunch of lawyers. And this is exactly the my concern when I first heard about this. I said, wouldn't that be fraudulent conveyance? And our lawyer said, absolutely not, Adam. Doing it this way, it is not fraudulent conveyance or fraudulent transfer, period, paragraph. So I don't have the knowledge or the brains to tell you the details of why that's not, but it's not. And again, when you look at our firm, 36 years in business, we have licensed professionals that do these things. We would never, ever tell someone to do something that was not, in fact, or that, you know, anywhere remote to fraud or anything that wasn't right. So we've been around a very long time. We got a great reputation. So we always give you the right and best information.
So what about people who are saying, okay, I own a couple of rental properties. Each one is in an LLC, so it's got a separate bank account. And so if you're telling me that I can just do everything that I've been doing just with one LLC, how do people typically attack the accounting side of things and banking side of things?
So on the accounting side of things, it all depends if you're managing the property or if you have a property manager. But with you have the option, if you wanted to, you could have a separate account. I have one LLC with an EIN number, and I could have a sub-account for each property that I had if that works well for you. But ultimately, what happens is that, assuming you have a property manager, they're managing the property, and they're going to give you your repairs, maintenance, and capital improvements, and you just hand that to your tax guy. So there's not a lot of accounting involved with this. If you're managing your own property, you need to have a spreadsheet or something to where you're tracking repairs, maintenance, and capital improvements. That makes a difference on what your tax bill is going to be. So for accounting purpose, whatever is convenient for you, the IRS just requires we keep contemporaneous records, whether it's a spiral notebook or Excel spreadsheet or QuickBooks, that doesn't matter. Just keep contemporaneous records, meaning you're recording it as you go.
Excellent. Okay, so we've covered the real estate privacy trust and the single LLC structure. Let's talk more about Wyoming and Nevada and why use a single LLC in one of these states versus where someone lives. And can you? Like if somebody lives in Florida, can they use a Wyoming LLC for this?
Yeah. So the question that always comes up at some point is, how is Wyoming law going to help me in Florida or California or wherever your property is located? It is a federal law. It's called the Internal Affairs Doctrine. It is also echoed in every state law statute as well. And it tells the courts very clearly, the laws of the state of incorporation shall govern the internal affairs and liabilities of managers and members of LLCs. So if you get sued in California, well, yeah, we're going in front of a California judge. But the judge has two options, either he or she can apply Wyoming law to the case, or they might recuse themselves and say, we don't want to deal with this Wyoming stuff. Go file a lawsuit in Wyoming. Either way, you get the protections of Wyoming. Now, don't confuse us. So, in Nevada, we could have, there's prostitution and there's gambling. And just because I'm a Nevada entity doesn't mean I can go do those things in other states. I still have to abide by the laws of the state that I'm operating in. If in Nevada, I can do a 3-day eviction notice and California is 30 to 60 days. Well, just because I'm a Nevada entity doesn't mean I can go give them a 3-day note. I still have to abide by the laws there. But if there's a question as to piercing the veil or collecting on a judgment, it reverts to the laws of the state of incorporation. And you don't have to have a Nevada or Wyoming office or anything like that. You're only required to have a registered agent. And like our firm, we have offices in all 50 states. To serve as the registered agent. And the registered agent is simply the legal address on record with the Secretary of State that must receive notice in the event of a lawsuit. Kind of like the trustee for that land trust. The law only requires that it is a physical address open for service of process Monday through Friday during business hours from 9 to 5. So I tell people, if you live in California, when we register there, if you want to be your own registered agent, you sure can. I think it's penny wise and pound foolish, but you could, because if a process server showed up at your house 3 times to serve a legal notice and 3 times you're not home, they end up with a default judgment. You lost a lawsuit that you didn't know existed. I just had that a couple weeks ago. I had this happen to a guy. So yeah, it's not a good thing. So that's it. Registered agent is all that's required, is we have a Nevada or Wyoming registered agent. And then we just register the LLC. It's called foreign filing. I'm sending a piece of paper to Florida that says this is a Wyoming LLC organized and protected under the laws of Wyoming. And we are doing business in Florida or whatever state you're operating. The process is called foreign filing. And keep in mind, this has absolutely nothing to do with taxes. I don't care if you made money from Hong Kong. If you live in California, you're going to pay California tax on whatever income you get. Obviously, not the topic today, but one of the great benefits of owning real estate is the tax benefits. Passive income gets offset by passive losses. We pay little or no tax on any of our cash flow off of these properties. But again, there's no additional tax filings just because you're set up in Nevada or Wyoming. Taxes are filed exactly the same as if you had set it up there in your home state.
Excellent. Well, Adam, we've covered a lot today. I want to be respectful of your time, and we're going to have you back. We're going to talk on the next episode about partnerships and getting your rental properties to kick off a K-1 instead of flow through right to your 1040. But for now, let's close this conversation out. Any parting thoughts on corporations, Nevada and Wyoming, everything that we've talked about today?
Yeah, super important. As you get things set up and operating, these pieces have to be done right. And we've got to be proactive in doing this. You had brought up, someone says, well, I'll just get an umbrella policy. Well, remember, you can get a $1 million umbrella for about $200 a year. They are cheap for a reason. An umbrella policy only kicks in if the underlying policy exhausts its policy limits. Your chances of winning the Texas state lottery are twice as good. So I have one. I have an umbrella for one reason. If one of my boys gets in a car wreck, the only insurance I have that might max out a policy limit is my auto insurance, and that's why I carry it. But keep good insurance. But again, be proactive in getting your entity established. It's from the date of incorporation. When you start this moving forward, now we're protected. I can't go backward to cover you for a problem in the past. So at the time the incident gave rise to a lawsuit, whose name is on record as the owner? That's the person that's going to be responsible. So that's very important. Just be proactive. Start thinking about getting these things in place when you don't have problems. And by getting these little pieces in place and doing things properly, that really puts you in the very best position where you can sleep easy at night, knowing all these things are done right. I've done the best I can do. My family, my home, my future wages, those are all completely protected by getting these things done right.
Absolutely. All right, Adam, if people want to reach out to you, get started on this, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, just send me an email, adam@nchinc.com. Again, adam@n, like Nevada, C like corporate, H like headquarters, INC for incorporated, nchinc.com. Send me an email. Make sure you put that you had been on the podcast with Passive Income Pilots, and I will help with whatever you need. We'll schedule some time, and I'll just understand what you have going on. And I'll see how we can best help you with things.
Really appreciate your wisdom. We can't wait for the next one because we're going to get into some more advanced strategy. So look forward to having you back then. And for anybody who is looking for some entity structuring, highly recommend these guys. They've been very helpful in my own personal situation. So thank you, Adam, sincerely for the work that we've done over the last few weeks.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to talking again soon.
Take care.